Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, happy 6'10 day. Celebrate by putting on your 6'10 Pendergast jersey or your Payne jersey or whatever. We need jerseys.
Then that's drive all around 6'10. Drive around the entire loop. In the left lane,
yes,
at 61 miles per hour,
blaring our station.
That's what you do. Yes,
roll down the windows.
Park yourself in the left lane.
They
going
love that.
61 miles per hour.
People love that. Yes,
including through the Galleria.
Yes,
maintain 61 miles per hour, no matter what.
That's hilarious.
Turn off your adaptive cruise and just cruise 61 miles per hour.
That's funny. That is funny. All right, let's get to the petty cast here. We get petty every Tuesday. We're petty. We've been petty several times this morning, but we make a point of doing it at 8 o'clock every Tuesday. And we're petty. We highlight other people's pettiness, and we want to highlight yours as well. So text in 713-572-4610 if you want to get in and tell us what you're petty about. All right, I have one thing off the top, Seth, and this is with the with respect to something that gets cited very frequently on Astro broadcasts. You know how I feel. I think we've got a really good team here. I think Todd Kallas and Jeff Blum and Julia Morales do an excellent job. We're very lucky. That said, the amount to which they lean in to catch percentage.
Yes.
In the outfield, catch probability is it verges on annoying a little bit, and here's why. The stat sucks. It's awful. It's a horrible stat, and I was all ready to go to grab the audio that illustrated perfectly why it is such a flawed and stupid stat, because I heard Todd Kallas talking about Jacob Melton's catch on Friday night on the Saturday broadcast. He was talking about it. Jacob Melton made a spectacular catch in right field where he was diving forward into the dirt along the right field line and to kind of save, you know, Colton Gordon's hide. And it was an amazing catch. And it wasn't so much that I disagreed with the percentage initially or whatever the case may be. It's that the very next day, Todd said on the broadcast, and again, I recorded the replay of the game so I could go get this audio, and for some reason, Space City Home Network took out that half inning of the replay of the game, so I couldn't get it. Maybe it's because
they know.
Yes, they know
they
it's
know.
Stupid. Todd said that the catch that Jacob Melton made had initially been a 5-star catch because it was only a 15% catch probability. They changed it overnight to a 45% catch probability.
You know what? You know what this is, Sean? You know what they do? This is why it annoys me.
Dude.
Because the vast majority of the time, there will be some incredible catch in the outfield. And usually, so right there, like you said, like, okay, how good of a stat is it that if in the moment it can be revised and cut in half?
By 30%. It gets moved up by 30 percentage points.
But then also, sometimes they're like, hey, you're just enjoying a great catch in the outfield.
Yeah.
And they'll say, Oh, there's an 85% catch probability on that. We're like, what the hell, man?
Dude.
You know what it's like? It's like when you get that letter from one of those scam, like, hey, you made Who's Who in America.
Right.
And you're like, ooh, I must be special. No. Like, oh, no, they're just trying to get me to spend $85 for a leather-bound book with my name
in it. Get my face in it,
Yeah.
They're
hey, everybody. Hey, we've been trying for 2 years, and now we're having a baby. Well, you know, statistically, with all the advances they've made, in fertility, it was probably only a matter of time. Shut up! Let me enjoy this moment.
So the fact that it went overnight from 15% to 45% is dumb. And then there were two other plays like along the weekend. Like on Saturday, in the bottom of the ninth, I forget who hit it, but it was that double, that pop fly double that landed just inside the foul line that Altuve was chasing and slid to go get.
Yeah.
And Callis goes, that was a 95% catch probability. I'm like, anybody with a set of eyes knows that there was not a 95% chance of that getting caught. And then real quick, one other one. Melton made another great catch bottom of the eighth on Sunday. Similar catch where he's diving forward and makes it. And this is what you're talking about. Makes the catch like, man, what a catch by the young guy. 95% catch probability. My ass, 95% catch probability.
This is what the problem is, that a lot of the great catches, we know this as fans. We don't need them to put a number on it. A lot of great catches are made because they got a bad read initially, or they didn't get a good jump on the ball, or they misread it, or whatever it might be in the air. So it ends up being like the computer looks at it and says, well, the player was here, the ball was in the air this long. How often does somebody make that catch? So it almost, it's only saying, if you do an outfielder is going to make some mistakes early in the ball being put in play, but you still got to give him credit for making whatever athletic move they, I'm already over explaining it.
Yeah,
let me enjoy something. Like, I don't want to go to an art museum with a neuroscientist next to me the whole time telling me why I enjoy this painting.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Actually, I take that back. Now I kind of do. Okay. But sometimes you have to enjoy beautiful things just for the sake of being beautiful.
They're going to keep citing it, and I love them. I think they do a great job. I think it's just a silly, stupid metric. It's dumb.
I don't like how much they eagerly anticipate it and are just like almost salivating over what the catch.
They're pretty giddy about it.
I feel like it might be something contractual with MLB.
Maybe.
Because they own the StatCast data and everything. So it's, as far as Melton goes, by the way, this is another one big thing as we approach the trade deadline of all right, hey, he's a lefty. Hey, makes these great plays defensively. Gives you competitive at-bats. But the actually getting hits, continues to elude him.
Three
for 20 with 8 strikeouts.
He is.
He's not going up there and flailing around
he's
like
not.
A damn fool.
He's not.
So there's something there. And he's also still recovering from this groin injury. So I don't know with Melton yet.
We'll see. All right, I'm going to skip down here, Ben, to Mad Dog, because I want to make sure we – I have a couple others I want to make sure we get in. The Tom Thibodeau firing last week by the Knicks. I just love Mad Dog Russo because he thinks that you need to know players from like back in the 50s and 60s to be able to have educated opinions on things in the year 2025. Here's Mad Dog going nuts on Knicks owner James Dolan for firing Tom Thibodeau.
And everybody knows who follows, who sees, who watches the NBA, knows if Anthony Towns or OG make a free throw, or if God didn't let the ball bounce in with Halliburton's 3 or 2 at the end of game 1, the Knicks would have won that series. But this is about Dolan. Don't let anybody hear you. Don't let anybody in America hear you say, this is Leon Rose. Nonsense. Rose and Thibodeau are tight. He's his agent. This has got nothing to do with you. You think Rose wanted to fire Tom Thibodeau after he got to a conference final? But Rose doesn't have any power there. Dolan does. He sits on the baseline with a dopey hat on, thinking that he knows something about, but he wouldn't even know who George Mikan is. He knows nothing. He's there because his old man was a brilliant businessman, and he took over. That's what this is all about. Oh, my God. It's the guy that ran Marv Albert out of the building.
This is the second time that Mad Dog has cited an athlete from, like, back in the 50s and 60s. The first
That
we've played on the show.
Yeah.
The first one was Taylor Swift. Didn't know who Len Dawson was.
And Curly Culp.
She doesn't know Len Dawson.
And yeah. It wasn't Taylor Swift. I think it was Swifties in general. He was being the grumpy old man that didn't like. And the funniest thing about that was like, I guarantee you, if you ask the average 22-year-old Chiefs fan, male or female, who Curley called, tell me all about Curley Culp and what a horrible trade they made when they traded him to the Oilers and everything. They don't know.
Nope.
Yeah. This is his shtick, though. I think they very much encourage him to be sound like the grumpiest old man possible.
It is, but he's a New York guy.
I'm from back when.
Yeah, he's a New York guy, though. I'm guessing some of the anger is real when it comes.
I think some of the anger and discontent is real, but especially the whole bringing up players from back in the day that a lot of young male sports fans, or at least even educated sports fans, don't know. I will support him in this, in that I think for your. If you have an owner who's a wannabe GM, he should know all of those old-time players.
Should know the history. And
I support his pettiness towards James Dolan.
Right.
You're supporting being petty towards him.
Yeah.
Or you're being petty towards him.
Yeah.
We celebrate all pettiness in all directions folks.
We do. All right. Let's get to We'll skip back here. Let's do Windhorst here, Ben. Is Adam Silver petty enough to shame NBA players into trying in the All-Star game? This is Brian Windhorst. If you missed the news last week, Adam Silver revealed that it is going to be a USA versus the world format for the NBA All-Star game this year. Here is the motivation behind that, according to ESPN's Brian Windhorst.
Well, let's just be honest about what this is. This is an attempt to shame the players because Adam Silver and the league has tried all kinds of different things to get them to care, right? They tried money. They tried to incentivize their play by giving them more money. That did not work. They tried to incentivize their play by their sense of duty and history. A couple of years ago, Adam Silver brought in these veterans, these legends, to talk to the players, to try to get them to feel the sense of the need to invest in All-Star Weekend. They did it in Indiana, which got this big history of basketball. The players didn't care. And so now this is a move to hit them as Americans, to go at an area where maybe they will feel a little bit of a pinch.
I mean, that is a little petty, Adam Silver. Like, all right, I got to do what I can to try to make you try in the NBA All-Star.
I'm going to be petty towards Windhorst here. Okay. That basically, because if anything, those previous attempts were attempts to shame them.
Yeah.
I think in the USA versus the world, that's incentivizing. That's like trying to find out, okay, where can we get something that you guys feel emotionally about? And now on social media, will be shamed if they don't. So that it'll be the 300 million Americans shaming them if they don't put up for their country when they're facing the rest of the world, or in those other respective countries as they're facing the big bad awful USA. Yes. I think it's a prioritization of effective incentivizations.
Yeah.
I'm petty towards Windhorst. Windhorst trying to like, oh, you're going after Adam Silver. Nobody's scared of Adam Silver.
No, that's true.
You could go up and slap him in the face and he'd be like, let's discuss why you did that.
That's true. I'm looking forward to the format next year. I think the world team has a really good chance. I mean, they're
going after Silver is like 50 Cent going after Moby. You're like, you're not scared of nothing. Okay.
Let's continue with the pettiness, and I'm going to mix my petty in right here. Okay, so this is me. This is my pettiness towards Rich Eisen. Rich Eisen, who we've poked fun at on this show, mostly because of his reaction back in the day to the Texans drafting Davis Mills, if you recall that. Like, what are they doing? Yeah.
Real quick, it wasn't 50 Cent, obviously, that went after him. I'm thinking about Slim Shady, not Eisen.
Right.
Like, 50 Cent would have no issue going after. He would never lower himself to go after Moby.
There you go. So, Seth, you know how ESPN is now doing a lot of licensing of shows where they don't own the show, but the show brings in so many eyeballs that they get into a licensing partnership with the show. The Pat McAfee show is probably the most famous version of this, where McAfee still owns the show, but it's broadcast on ESPN's platforms. And the concern that a lot of people had about the McAfee show was that, is this going to water it down that it's on ESPN? Is this going to take its rough edges off? It's it's edginess of the show. McAfee still does stuff on YouTube where he's cursing all the time and whatnot, but he's got a couple hours on ESPN that are probably a little more homogenized than the original McAfee product was. So you've got that. You now have Inside the NBA, which is going to be in a similar relationship, the old TNT show with Barkley and Shaq that is very outspoken within the basketball world, right? A little edge to it.
Yeah.
So there's some concern there. Like, is ESPN going to homogenize Inside the NBA? Rich Eisen's radio show / streaming show is also moving from Roku over to ESPN, over to Disney. Mm-hmm. And Rich Eisen did an interview with Shaq. He sat down with Shaq on Shaq's podcast. And Rich Eisen, again, now keep in mind, Inside the NBA and Pat McAfee, those are shows that have an edge to them that you should be, if you like those shows, should be concerned about ESPN maybe smoothing off and making the show a little less fun. Rich Eisen was asked about it and said, you know, I really haven't spoken about this on my show because I'm in love with the Roku people. I'm trying to be respectful as possible, not talking about this on this program, but this show is moving to Disney, my radio show, and we've been given the same assurance as I'm sure Pat has. And I would be stunned in any way, shape, or form that they try to change our show. There's a reason why you guys are who you are, and I would be surprised. Rich Eisen's show is the most homogenized thing.
It's the most Disney-fied potential, yeah.
Dude,
yeah, it's pre-Disney-fied.
If anything, and I were Disney, I'd be like, look, you need to be a little more like McAfee.
Well, no, and you know what? Honestly, I don't mean to stick up for him during the Pettycast here.
Yes.
I think that's where Eisen might be looking at it is, they're not going to have us all of a sudden turn into a debate show. Or like, okay. Like he's, for lack of a better word, it's... His show is more boring than a lot of other people. It's more laid back. Let's say laid back.
Okay.
You know, it's just him
boring
with very
right.
low energy interviewing people. And a lot of people enjoy that.
Yeah.
I could see ESPN saying, hey, we need to jazz this up a
Maybe.
Little bit.
I hate that you're doing this
you
right
gotta
now.
You got to go after Moby.
I hate that you're doing this right now. I hate that you are doing this right now. Because this is, I choose to believe that this is Rich Eisen being like that episode of Seinfeld where Costanza tried to be the bad boy wearing the old Letterman jacket. And, you know, like sitting there saying, you know, like, skipping work and whatnot, trying to impress a woman. This is Eisen. In my mind, this is Eisen trying to be the bad boy. Yeah, you know. Yeah, like,
I think might be a little bit of it.
It's trying to quell McAfee and Inside the NBA. I've been given assurances they're not going to do that with my sit-down, monotone interview show, okay?
We had Eisen on once with Meltzer, and I remember once after it being like, we will never have him on again, Mike. And Mike didn't understand why, because I think Mike really likes that. I like Eisen. I like respect what he's done and everything. But I'm like, he could not have sounded more boring to talk to us. Like he was bored to talk to us.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, dude, this is like, this is like when you're talking to somebody who's stoned.
Yeah.
You're like, am I boring? Like, why are they not responding to what I'm saying?
I think he's good doing the studio show on NFL Network. I do. I think he's good. I think he does a nice job on their draft show and whatnot. I don't get the allure of his radio show. I'm not saying, like, it's successful. I'm sure, making a lot of money doing the radio show. I don't understand the allure of it. I just don't.
This last one is, if Kirk Minahan, ever, who's on Barstool now, used to be on up in Boston. He's been around forever. Has some, like, just viciously loyal listeners and fans of his.
Yeah.
This is Kirk Minahan berating his underperforming producer.
Yeah.
F***ing bitch. Like a f***ing baby. That's what you are. You're a f***ing baby who's never lived a life. You go around in your f***ing pool in little circles and let your dad raise you and your grandfather raise you. You won't live a real life. You're a f***ing baby. Look, you yelled at me earlier this week, so shut your f***ing mouth.
Okay.
You work for me, fat boy.
Correct.
You work for me. So you f*** up like that and I give you a f***ing pass. That's way bigger f***ing loyalty than something with Mick or something with your pretend girlfriend or any of that bullshit. So you should look at the real stuff and not the fake stuff. Instead of that, and act like a pouty f***ing baby all week. You're a f***ing complete zero to me. You're f***ing dead to me. You can sit there in your fat ass in there until you f***ing die and act like, oh, Kirk to me. But f*** you. That could have f***ed us. And you did it on purpose. I don't agree with you. You're a f***ing liar, too. You're a f***ing liar.
Not a liar.
You're a f***ing liar. You did that on purpose to try and f*** me over. And I still kept you on the f***ing job. So you should say thank you every time you look at me. Do you understand me?
Look, here's the thing. I mean, say what you will about me and Seth, but at least we save that for Ben off the air and don't do it on the air, you know?
I know. Poor
Thank
Ben.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Poor Ben, how many bleeps he had to add to that?
I know. That we had to play that just based
That's
on the amount of labor
intensive.
That Ben had to put into that.
That's you know, Minahan, back when they were, and probably I'm sure some Boston radio shows are still like that, yeah. But his show and some of those shows up in Boston, sometimes you turn it on and it's, you cannot hear what anybody's saying because they're all just
yelling.
screaming at each other.
Yep.
He probably, after that show, two things happened. One, Minahan was totally cool with his producer, and I don't know, his producer at least acted like he was totally cool with Minahan.
Yeah.
And if anything, the criticism for the producer was that he didn't yell back enough.
Producer was pretty docile in that situation right there, for sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. That was our petty cast. We'll read some of your texts in the next segment. We've been petty about Cleveland this morning. Speaking of Cleveland, Jonathan Peterlin, who does the afternoon show on our sister station, 92.3 The Fan, is going to join us, and we'll get the skinny on Nick Chubb from Jonathan Peterlin, who's obviously been covering Nick Chubb for a number of years. That'll be at 8:40, 8:45 on the show in about 20-25 minutes. So make a note of that. Minicamp gets started in a little over an hour. The four big questions for Texans minicamp. We've got that coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, before we get to questions for Texans Mandatory Minicamp, which starts in about an hour and 20 minutes or so, some quick updates from around the league with respect to mandatory minicamp and other places. These are interesting. Players that have not shown up for mandatory minicamp in three different camps, just interesting ones here, Seth. These are all contractually driven, by the way.
Yeah.
Terry McLaurin in Washington, not at mandatory minicamp. And by the way, you may be wondering, mandatory? Well, they're not there. What's the punishment? For guys who have already gotten paid, like the three guys I'm about to tell you, the punishment's nothing. It's a three-day total of $104,000 in fines. The guys I'm going to name are all guys who have made above $15 million a year at some point in their careers.
Which is a lot of money, but when these guys are agitating for new contracts, that's almost like legal fees.
Cost of doing business.
Or whatever you're going to pay. Yeah, it's a business expense.
Yep.
To express displeasure.
Trey Hendrickson, not surprising. He's threatened to sit out the season if he doesn't get a new contract. We'll see.
Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't.
That's exactly
it works
right.
For Trent Williams. I think he might be the only one that I can remember where it genuinely worked out.
Well, Le'Veon Bell, it worked out. He got paid, but he was never the same player ever again.
Wasn't the same player, and it wasn't even as clear-cut. Like with Trent Williams, Trent Williams had a clear... He was clearly disgruntled for even non-money reasons with Washington,
medical reasons,
so that was a whole different dynamic.
Yep.
Yeah.
The last one, T.J. Watt. Not at Steelers minicamp.
All the scuttlebutt I've seen has been that they're optimistic that they're going to sign him to something and that perhaps Aaron Rodgers coming in has something to do with it. I don't know. I guess some of that comes down to whether TJ believes however they try to hype up Aaron Rodgers in his mind.
Yeah.
He's getting tired of being on a defense that's playing with the support of a quarterback that's a procession of either aging quarterbacks who aren't any good anymore or late first-round picks or cast-offs from Chicago. Like all these various things they've tried, he's probably getting tired of it, and it might feel like same old
for him. Well, I think the dynamic that can't be ignored with T.J. Watt, too, is he is J.J. Watt's younger brother, and he watched his older brother have a career where he largely did not play in a ton of meaningful games, never played on a team that made it past the divisional round. You know, like J.J. Watt seems to be okay in retirement here with all that, and he'll crab walk into the Hall of Fame. He'll be fine. But T.J. Watt has not even been on a team that's won a playoff game. They haven't won a playoff game in Pittsburgh since before T.J. Watt got there in 2017. I do wonder if there is some element. Now, look, ultimately, T.J. Watt probably just wants to get paid and be the highest paid non-quarterback in football, and that'll and he probably loves Pittsburgh. His jersey is everywhere. We went to a game there last year. There's no jersey is more plentiful than T.J. Watt, but I don't think it can be ignored, Seth, that the guy has not played in a playoff win since he got there, and maybe he wants to play on a team where he ultimately has a better chance of winning. Who knows?
I mean, it's similar to the Myles Garrett situation in a lot of ways, and it does. I mean, it's easy. The cynical side of me wants to say, well, Myles Garrett just said he wanted to go to a champion, and then the Browns gave him a boatload of money, and it was as simple as that. I think there was also a sales pitch by the Browns to Myles Garrett to try to explain, hey, how we plan on turning this all around. And I think, I'm guessing with TJ, to try to look at it as realistically as possible, it's probably a combination of those two things. Either a boatload of money and a pitch that, like, no, we figured it out. Yeah. No, we're actually going to win playoff games here real soon, buddy.
Yeah, the closest we ever got to something like this with J.J. Watt here was when he was just agitating for his second contract with, like, little tweaks here and there.
Or when he actually did deftly maneuver his way out of town via the getting released.
Well, I'm not saying,
he got himself released.
I'm talking more about agitating for a new contract than getting up and out of here. Like,
I guess with TJ, though, doesn't it feel like a combination of it? It's not just the contract. It's probably also the feeling about the organization. With JJ, it was very much a feeling about the organization and Jack Easterby.
Yep.
And JJ had the benefit of people hating Easterby so much and everything else that was going on there, that he managed the PR side of it brilliantly.
Oh, I don't think anybody was mad at him. Everybody's too busy being mad at the
organization. He had built up enough goodwill, and people hated Easterby so much that it was the general feeling was, yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
I'm so, like, I can see why guys don't want to play.
Yeah, my point I was making was more about trying to get more money than trying to get up and out of here. So I guess the biggest question for the Texans with respect to OTAs is about CJ. Will CJ throw today? That's the biggest question. And I don't think he will. I think if he's sore or whatever, use this as an adjunct to whatever. You got 4 or 5 weeks coming up here. Making sure he's ready to go for training camp is the most. To me, that's more important that he's ready to go for training camp than whatever this 2 days of work represents. Because he's out there, he's plugged in, he's on the headset and all that other stuff.
My biggest thing is that if I heard this from the Texans organization, and I'm not expecting them to divulge anything like this, but it would feel good. It's just that magical little phrase that you hear with players, which is, if this were a regular season game, he'd be practicing and playing.
Okay.
That's what I want to hear. And I'm not expecting that I will hear that, but that's what would actually make me feel a lot better about it. That's what I kind of convince myself of, that, man, given all the other context clues, the fact that he's out there running around, that he's shooting baskets, all this, that, man, all right, if it were the regular season, then he'd probably play.
Yeah.
I'd like to tell myself that.
Okay.
But then there's also the other part of me that says, okay, Seth, but if he plays, he cited injuries as a partial explanation for some of his haphazard play last year.
Yeah.
And how much of this tightness in the shoulder is similar to what he was dealing with last year. That's what makes me nervous about it.
Yep. So look, an hour and change from now, we'll know a little bit more. We'll at least know if he's participating out there.
Damian Woody just said that it's a huge red flag that CJ's not throwing during OTAs. We can play that. That was on ESPN.
Oh, he just said it on TV?
I'll send it to Ben during the break.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds good. So that's the big one. I'm anxious to take attendance here and see if everybody's out there. You know, it seems like the guys that are missing from around the league, Seth, are guys with contractual issues. And I don't know that the Texans have any of those right now that we know of. You pointed out earlier, we didn't know Steven Nelson had an issue until he's tweeting out pictures of Nick Caserio's vest and calling him a clown. We didn't know anything about that. I have a hard time imagining. I have a hard time like thinking of anybody who would have a glaring contractual issue. They seem to have taking care of everybody that needed taken care of, but I may be wrong on that. Who knows?
With a lot of people, and like it was with Steven Nelson, I think the feeling when he was agitating, it was people felt like, okay, Why?
Yeah.
Any of the ones that might come out now, it might feel like if all of a sudden we found out that Tim Settle was agitating for a new contract or something.
That's a random one.
There are a lot of guys. Right. Well, it was kind of random when Steven Nelson did it. It wasn't one that you expected. It was kind of out of the blue. But it was triggered apparently by Malik Collins getting his extension round around minicamp time. And Steven Nelson felt like the team had made him promises or like that for whatever reason he was agitated. So we didn't expect it. It was out of the blue.
Yep. I'm anxious to find out what the CJ Gardner-Johnson experience is like. The guy who said that he stayed away from voluntary OTAs because he felt he might be a bit too much for the team.
He felt like he was coming from a place. It was weirder than that. It felt like he was just coming from a place that had been to the mountaintop. Yeah. And he came into this and he liked the vibe. And yet they haven't been there yet. So, yeah, maybe they're not ready for him. I still don't understand the explanation. But we'll find out exactly
what he meant. I just don't think he felt like coming to OTAs.
That's my hypothesis.
Yeah.
That's what we ultimately decided on.
Which rookies are going to continue to impress? It seems like the two wide receivers, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll, have made a big impact and impression on guys so far there as much as you can. It's easier to do it at that position than it is at some of the trenches positions.
It's hard on offensive line, and yet we're getting negative reports about Kenyon Green up in Philadelphia already and
not-padded
practices.
That's hard to do.
Jalen Carter apparently put him in a blender a couple times in that practice. So I guess glaringly bad offensive line play will catch your eye. But even then, as hard as it is for me to do, Sean, I gotta always give the offensive lineman a partial excuse during non-padded stuff,
because
there's only so much you can do if a defensive lineman decides to start using power moves against you.
Yep.
It's just you're kind of screwed.
Yep. So those are the four big things. We're getting texts on the Pettycast here. People texting in their petties. I'm petty about the fact the Red Sox can whoop the Yankees' ass, and all the highlights on SportsCenter are Aaron Judge hitting home runs.
I'll tell you what I get petty about is that the Yankees fans, all these Yankees fans who are getting upset in advance about the potential of Aaron Judge not winning the MVP. And it just offends me on so many levels, because they'll say, if he doesn't win the MVP, this is a disgrace, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, first of all, we've seen Aaron Judge look, we've seen the Yankees themselves look like unstoppable forces in the first half of the season. But you got to play out the whole damn season, settle the hell down. And then the last people I want to hear about, like, we better not get screwed over, is the team that gets so much extra adulation simply because they're the Yankees.
Yep.
Just shut your skank butts down. Yeah.
We have a texter who agrees with our take on the ludicrousness of the catch probability stat on the Astros broadcast, and says, and I hate the 4-star and 5-star catches that they label them with. That's all predicated on the catch probabilities, the 4 and 5-star stuff. If it's a catch that's less than a 25% catch probability and you make it, that's a 5-star catch. And if it's less than 50%, that's a 4-star catch.
Yeah, we don't have to attach a number to every damn thing.
No,
okay? Yeah. We just don't, especially when so many times the number just does not reflect at all what your eyeballs and brain registered.
I
understand the value. That's what analytics are good for in a lot of regards. It's like, hey, it catches your blind spots where you see it. What you see isn't necessarily always what is the case. Except that, no, this is just, there, nobody's jobs are riding on this or anything. I just want to enjoy that catch for what it was. I see a guy making a brilliant catch, and you got to tell me it's a 10% or a 90% catch probability?
Yes.
Shut up.
Exactly. All right. Jonathan Peterlin does afternoons on 92.3 The Fan up in Cleveland. He has watched, I would assume, most, if not all, of the snaps that Nick Chubb took as a Cleveland Brown. Does a good job on the afternoons up there on 92.3 The Fan. We'll get the inside skinny on Nick Chubb from Jonathan Peterlin, and we'll do that coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, good to be with you. Yeah, 610 day, man, June 10th. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. We go out to the hotline right now. Our next guest does a great job on afternoons on our sister station, 92.3 The Fan, up in Cleveland. Of course, Cleveland, a big topic here because the newest Texan is Nick Chubb. Spent several good years up in Cleveland. And I'm actually anxious to talk about the Browns for a little bit as well. They're one of the more intriguing training camps, I think, with their quarterback situation. Jonathan Peterlin joining us on the show right now. Jonathan, great to talk to you. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, great to talk to you guys. How's it going?
We're doing good, man. We're doing good. So let's start with Nick Chubb. And look, all the reports, everything I've ever seen out of Cleveland, not just over the last couple days, but since Nick Chubb got there, is that he has been the model Cleveland Brown, big face of the turnaround from back in 2018 up there. From your experience covering Nick Chubb, I guess just give us kind of the thumbnail sketch, your version of what exactly we're getting here as a player, but also as a guy behind the scenes as well.
So it's a little interesting because everyone loves Nick Chubb, and he's the type of person, like, routinely callers be like, I want my daughter to date someone like Nick Chubb. Like, he's that type of role model, that type of citizen. But he's also not a rah-rah guy either. Like, he's not the guy that's going to rally the troops together and get everybody to, you know, go win one for the Gipper. I don't think the Texans necessarily need that. I don't think they're expecting that from him. But that's also just not really his role. He's one of the rare players that everyone understands the value that he brings, but then also was like, yeah, he's just not going to be the guy that leads the pep talk. He's not going to be the one that leads that charge, and that's okay. No one's ever really asked that of him. And when he first got in the league, he was around Baker Mayfield, so Baker was doing all that stuff, and he never had a necessary need to be that guy, but no one ever really asked that of him either. So it's an interesting case study because everyone really does love him and loves him as a person, but the other parts of being a superstar, that leader stuff, no one really ever asked of him.
Yeah, and you know, we hear that same thing from a lot of you guys, and it's kind of, for us, it's like, okay, Andre Johnson, that's cool, we've been through that, like, we don't expect that of him. I guess the biggest thing that we've been talking about is, realistically, because this is what it is, you know, there's a reason he gets a $2.5 million contract plus incentives. It's that a running back who has such a devastating knee injury like that, it's a tough uphill climb to get back to where you used to be. And personally, I'm not expecting him to get back to his old form. What's the best case scenario in your mind based on what you saw last season and given the severity of the injury?
Well, so this is the second major knee surgery for him. Mm-hmm. And so that, obviously, the second one obviously just takes a little bit more. Now, what I would give you optimistic viewpoint on is that what Nick's people and what Nick had been telling us the entire time was that it's not with the injury he had, it's not the first year back where he was going to be as explosive as he always was. It was going to be the second year back where he got to be as explosive. So, like, there always was that idea with Browns fans that we just kind of knew last year, all right, he wasn't going to look normal, wasn't going to be the same. By the way, our offensive line, bunch of tomato cans. I mean, absolutely dreadful. So I don't know anybody that could have ran behind that thing and the mess that it was. But, like, Nick didn't look good. And he'll be the first one to tell you that, I would imagine. But I would think you'd bank on that idea that year two off this injury was supposed to be much better than year one and getting him back. And I think that's why he made and he does this every offseason, but he made such an added emphasis to post all those videos of him doing the jump cuts and him squatting 7 million pounds. I think there was a reason behind that. And I think that's trying to showcase how explosive he can be, especially after this being the second time. I just don't know that that's reality, though, guys. But I would never count out Nick Chubb, because anytime anyone's done it, he's bounced back.
Jonathan Peterlin, 92.3 The Fan up in Cleveland, joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Jonathan, how close did it come, do you think, with Nick Chubb staying there? There had been talk of conversation still between the Browns and Chubb. The Browns are a strange team because they're making a bunch of moves that make it look like a rebuild, and yet they're paying Myles Garrett. So I don't know. Give us your version of what's going on up there, and how close do you think it came? Was it more Nick Chubb just wanting to leave, or did it come close to him staying there?
Yeah, Sean, you're right, and that it is a strange situation because you think if it's a mini rebuild, what are you paying Myles Garrett for? But they didn't want to let Myles go. The reality is with Nick Chubb, I think that it was more they were lowballing Nick Chubb. They weren't giving Nick Chubb a fair enough offer. And he took a discount last year in many ways, came back on a very, very team-friendly deal, but he wanted to go ahead and be a Brown. It's like, how many years can you do that? You guys know how much Nick Chubb has made in his career earnings? I don't know if you guys looked at like SpotRac or any of those websites recently.
How much?
$36, $37 million. He's in that range.
Wow.
Like, to put it in proper context, Jedrick Wills has made as much money as Nick Chubb. And that just doesn't seem right. Like, no part of that seems fair. Yeah. And so I think with Nick, I think this is him looking at it. The Browns are very ruthless. Andrew Berry, when it comes to like this type of stuff, he can be a little callous. And I think this was just them saying, we drafted two running backs, and obviously they had the negotiations and talked to Nick Chubb before that, but they drafted two running backs. They liked Jerome Ford. He averaged 5.4 yards a carry last year, and they just didn't have the carries for him. And I really do think the other side of that is Nick Chubb saying, I want to showcase that I can have a second act. I don't think he's going to be, you know, Derrick Henry, who ends up 1,900 rushing yards, leads the league in rushing touchdowns last year on a new team. I don't think that's the case for him. But I know him well enough to know that he wants to try to be that guy. And so that's all I think that was.
We're with Jonathan Peterlin from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. You can follow him on X at JPeterlin. And Jonathan, yesterday we played Ken Carman voicing his disgust with the fact that that Chubb is going to Houston, which has been linked to Cleveland in so many ways over the past few years. Do you share Ken Carman's disgust with the Houston Texans that Ken does?
No, not at all. Even though you guys, the Texans have obviously gotten the better of the Browns in all of these transactions. No, that's not the Texans. Why is that the Texans' fault? Now it's going to be weird. But ultimately, the Texans are a legitimate playoff team. Like I prefer this than him going and playing for, I don't know, Jacksonville or somewhere. Like this at least makes sense. He's trying to be on a competitive football team. I don't know about C.J. Stroud's shoulder injury. You guys know way better than I do about that. But, like, it's a real quarterback. Like, I'm happy for Nick Chubb.
I wish we
don't know any more than you do on Deshaun.
Yeah, they're very, very secretive over there, Jonathan. Yes.
We know that he didn't have surgery, according to Aaron Wilson, that he didn't have surgery. But, you know, since we're bringing up all of those various transactions, and one of those transactions is still in the building on the quarterback depth chart in Deshaun Watson, I'm fascinated by like how they even run this quarterback competition up there with five different potential quarterbacks. How is that going throughout this time of the year?
Well, we're charting voluntary OTA passing. That's how
that's going. Oh, that's the sweet spot.
Yes!
Oh yeah,
it's rough, man. It's I like Shador. I'm a fan of Shador. But like what are we getting with Joe Flacco? We're just running it back from 2 years ago. Is that all that is? And then all the way down, I like that you even bring Deshaun in the mix. Deshaun is he's not a part of this competition to begin with. And if Deshaun sees the field, I'll be very, very surprised. There will have to be a lot of injuries and a lot of things to go really, really wrong for Deshaun to see the field, despite all the workout videos and how he wants to go ahead and, you know, show everyone that he can be all right again. The man's made of glass, though. You guys sold us a bill of goods. Now, forget the like lack of quarterback play. The man cannot stay healthy.
Can I interest you in this Deshaun? Yes.
You know what, Jonathan? I say five quarterbacks. I say five just because it sounds better. It's the same way the Texans had gone through a period where they had a bunch of head coaches, but people would include the interim coaches in that, and they would say, the Texans have fired five coaches in the last 3 years. You're like, well, like Romeo Crennel is 97 years old. Yeah. He wasn't. Yeah.
Jonathan, as far as Deshaun goes, like the only stuff we get, obviously, is what we see on social media from him. How strange is it that he's acting more on social media like he's part of the Browns now than when he was actually the quarterback for the Browns?
It's very strange. And the even stranger part is every time we talk to Stefanski, he has to, like, rope him in some way. He'll be like, the four quarterbacks, and then, and Deshaun Watson, as if he almost forgets about him. He's like, I gotta bring him in the conversation.
Yeah.
I don't want the NFLPA to get mad at me. We'll rope him in. It's very, very weird. I mean, I imagine he's just trying to set himself up so that he can get to another team at some point. But
yeah.
If you guys look at the contracts, March of 2027 is about as early as they can get out of this thing. So I don't know what he's in a hurry for.
It's crazy.
No, Jonathan.
Real quick, just do you think Deshaun Watson ever takes a snap in the NFL again?
I could see it. Yeah, okay. I could see it after a couple years, the way that these things go. I could totally see it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, Jonathan, the weird thing for us during the whole Deshaun ordeal was the one training camp where he showed up despite everything going on, and he was out there at training camp not doing anything, and then one day he's out there wearing a penny as a walk-through scout team safety.
Yeah.
And it was the weirdest experience. Everything was so weird that year, and I know you guys are – going through a lot of the same weirdness with
who
the
do you show. Hey, Jonathan, last thing before we cut you loose, mm-hmm. We appreciate your time. Jonathan Peterlin, 92.3 The Fan. Who is the week one starter at quarterback for the Browns, if you had to predict right now?
I think it goes Flacco, mm-hmm. and then I think it's Flacco for like 6, 7, 8 weeks, and then it's Shador, and okay. then you go from there. I think mm-hmm. that's the one that makes the most sense. They love, at least they tell us, they love Kenny Pickett. I'm just not buying it yet. And I know he's like a practice field All-American. I just can't buy into that.
Yeah.
I don't, yeah, and now I promise this will be the last question. It seems like from the outside that like Shador has been a model citizen, no distractions, mm-hmm. anything like that.
He's been great. Everything advertised and then stuff, like the good advertisements, not the bad advertisements, but everything you'd want. Like, he's in the community. As far as, like, it's funny too, you just watch the local media and all my different colleagues around here, and like one by one they just start to turn and be like, you know what, he does throw a really nice football, and you know what, he is really, really nice, and he's really like with it and together, and he's got a good head on his shoulders. And he just does the things the right way. But yeah, it's kind of been all the people that were talking trash on him before the draft being like, don't take him at number two.
Yeah.
And I turning around and being like, yeah, that, you know what? He just looks leaps and bounds better than Dylan Gabriel and Kenny Pickett and some of these guys. And it's like, yeah, he should.
Yeah, that's Browns camp outside of here, obviously, because we cover the Texans. Browns camp is high up my list, the ones that intrigue me, no doubt about that. Jonathan Peterlin, you can get him, as Seth mentioned, at J Peterlin on X and afternoons on 92.3 The Fan, our sister station up in Cleveland. Hey, Jonathan, appreciate you making some time, jumping on with us. Have a great show this afternoon, my man.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right, you too. That's Jonathan Peterlin joining us here. It was interesting. We'll talk more about this on the other side, the Nick Chubb stuff. The point of view of his just sort of personality and leadership style I thought was intriguing in the analogy Seth brought up with that. Best case and worst case. You know, we like to break it down this way sometimes. Best case and worst case for the Nick Chubb experience here in Houston. What exactly are they, best case and worst case? Text in 713-572-4610. We'll do that as we head into the 9 o'clock hour coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.